And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The number of threats we are exposed to online seems to get bigger every day. There are phishing scams, Facebook hacks, and even spammy text messages. October is National Cybersecurity Month, and private businesses are teaming up with the government in an effort to keep us all alert. So joining Cincinnati Edition now to talk about some of the latest threats, our partner at the law firm Voorhees, and adjunct professor at Northern Kentucky University, Chase College of Law, Eric Richardson. Eric, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us local cybersecurity consultant and the mayor of the great city of Fort Wright, Kentucky, Dave Hatter. Dave, thanks for coming back in.
Always my pleasure, Michael. Thanks for having me.
For those of you listening, if you have questions or comments about what you're seeing online or what you're concerned about online, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. Dave, last time we had you on, I left quite scared because you let me know about some threats that maybe I wasn't even aware of, and really the way some of us kind of voluntarily expose ourselves to more threats. And we've got a long list of things to go down. And Eric, you're here because you consult with businesses and governments on how they are best prepared to experience some of these issues and how to deal with them in the aftermath. I want to start with you, Eric, because I want to know a little bit about what type of advice you're giving businesses today when so many new threats are emerging.
Absolutely, Michael. Honestly, it's really become a question of when, not if, a business will experience some type of hack, or whether a government will as well. So, what we try to advise our clients is to make sure that you essentially show the math of what you have done. That you need to take reasonable steps. It's not expected that you're going to be foolproof, but being able to do a lot of common sense things as well, making sure you're using strong passwords, firewalls, updating your software, trying to make sure that you're on top of many of these things that are well within your ability to be able to handle, and then also to be able to document what you've done as well, so that if there is a breach, then you can show that you have taken reasonable steps to meet the threat that's been presented.
And Dave, when we install software like Norton or McAfee or one of the leading security software companies, mm-hmm. when we install that stuff into our computers and it says we're protected, do they mean that? Are we protected? Is that sort of the first line of defense here?
Well, I agree with everything Eric said. It really is just a matter of when, especially if you're not taking any kind of steps to protect yourself and your family and your business. I mean, you're protected to an extent, but no, Eric mentioned it, and it's true. It's impossible to be 100% foolproof, and it's very expensive. You know, to a large extent, it's really about risk mitigation and trying to figure out how do you prioritize your limited resources to protect yourself as best as you can and hope that you don't need Eric to bail you out when it goes bad. But, you know, having the documentation and the legal expertise there when you do, you know, that is in my mind like table stakes. If you don't have some kind of antivirus, anti-malware, endpoint protection, you'll hear people use different terms for this, you're basically asking for disaster. But you also need to do some of the other things you mentioned, like use strong passwords, unique passwords for every account, multi-factor authentication, et cetera. There's a lot of things you need to do. You got to take a layered approach.
Okay. And so when we talk about passwords, and we talked about passwords, Dave, last time you were on, and some of the common mistakes that people can make, we have to have so many passwords these days, Eric. We probably have multiple email addresses these days, work account, personal account, maybe a general family account as well. You get social media access. Maybe you have multiple platforms you use, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all require passwords. You need a password to get into your computer. You need passwords to get into your bank account, your credit reports, and all those sorts of things. But we talked with Dave last time he was here about password managers, like something like Google might offer. Well, here, just put them all in here. What do you advise on that?
There are a number of different platforms. There's, you know, pluses and minuses to each of them. One of the biggest things that I think people don't realize that they do is that we give so much of our data on social media. Probably if I wanted to go online, and I'm confident Dave would be able to tell you, if you have your anniversary, you have your birthday, you have your kids' names, you have your pets' names, Dave could probably use that information to be able to identify pretty quickly some combination of what your passwords are likely to be. And if you have similar passwords, as all of us, you know, tend to use a lot of the same passwords, if one's breached, they're all breached. One of the things that you can do to kind of piggyback on what Dave had said before is if you are a business, identify the information that you are retaining and only retain what you need and only for as long as you need it. Because the longer that you hold on to data of customers who haven't been customers in 10 years, all that you're doing is making yourself a bigger target. So try to go on a data diet, as some people will say. Identify what you really need, identify how long you need to hold on to it, and then dispose of safely that data when you no longer have a business need for it to be able to do it. And governments can do the same thing.
Dave, what's your personal practice in making sure you don't forget your passwords?
I like a product called LastPass. There's a bunch of password managers out there, Dashlane, RoboForm, various companies that make highly secure encrypted password management tools. Again, we at Intrust typically recommend LastPass and have had really good luck with that. There are, and you know, I like to advise people, before you make any decision or just listen to what I or anyone else says, there are plenty of reputable sources, organizations like CNET or ZDNet or PC World, where they have editors and they have experts that will vet these products. Every year, all of these organizations will put out a list, like Best Password Manager of 2019, Best Antivirus Software of 2019. So instead of just assuming, like, I'm biased because I sell LastPass, which I'm not, by the way, but you know, you can go out and very easily do your own research, have some experts who vet these things, and make a smart decision about where you're going to put your information if you're going to do something like that. But again, I can't stress enough, in addition to having a strong, unique password for every site, and having a tool like LastPass or RoboForm will vastly simplify that for you across all your devices. You really have to use something like two-factor authentication or multi-factor, multi-step. It's called all these different things, so that if the bad guys do get your password, they still cannot easily get into your account.
The University of Maryland found in a research project that an attack occurs every 39 seconds on average, and that affects 1 in 3 Americans. Every 39 seconds, so in the, you know, the amount of time we've been on the air so far, you're talking upwards of nearly 40 attacks that have happened to people across the country. Eric, what are the ones that are emerging currently that are of most concern?
In terms of the types of threats, phishing emails are really some of the most common
things.
They're
getting to be so convincing. Mm-hmm.
They absolutely are. I mean, once upon a time when you would see the email from the Nigerian prince who needed your assistance to get access to his family fortune, and mistakes in spelling and things like that, that made them easy to spot. Now, oftentimes, they're mimicking the same email structure of the company. They purport to be from the payroll department, need you to update your information. I've seen them where they come from, supposedly your IT department, saying, just click on the link below and tell us how we're doing at monitoring for these types of threats. And those are disguised threats as well. Phishing emails are very prevalent. I'm sure Dave could also talk to you about the types of hacking that goes on as well with Trojan horse programs and things that are also introduced into systems. And ransomware continues to be a huge threat.
We spent some time talking about ransomware last time you were here, Dave. That seems to be the most consequential because you can really lose some money on that.
Well, you can lose your data. You can lose the money. You can go out of business. There was a headline just yesterday that this new ransomware generated the organization or guy, I don't know that they know who it is yet, $278,000 in 3 days. So when people think, you know, why is this happening? This can never happen to me. I don't need to take this seriously. People are making insane amounts of money off of this stuff. And they know that most people think it won't happen to them, et cetera, et cetera. So it's literally like a perfect storm of the technology has improved. Eric mentioned the phishing is getting much better. A lot of these things are automated. I mean, there are actually bad guys out there behind these ransomware attacks where they have their own help desk. When you can't figure out how to pay in Bitcoin, you can call a number and they have help desk people that will walk you through how to pay the ransom. I mean, that's how sophisticated this stuff is. You know, Eric said it, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, especially if you don't take this seriously. And ransomware is a huge problem. They're making a lot of money and doing a lot of damage with it.
Keeper Security's 2019 SMB cyber threat study found that 2/3 of senior decision makers at small businesses believe they're unlikely to be targeted by online criminals. So that goes to what you were saying, is that people just don't think it's going to happen to them. Let's talk about data breaches, because this is something that consistently emerges in the news. Maybe it's one of the online social giants or one of the big banks or something. Where are we seeing the latest situations emerge when it comes to data breaches that consumers should be aware of?
In terms of the types of data breaches, you know, kind of resulting from all the same sorts of things that we've talked about here, a lot of phishing emails where something appears to be from your Netflix account and they want you to update that, or they're constantly bombarding you and they appear to use legitimate links in among other illegitimate links that are contained within the email. Just the sophistication continues to grow. So if you're being contacted by someone that's soliciting any of this type of information, don't use the link provided in the email that's sent to you. Go on to the official site and to be able to respond to it to find out whether or not it's a legitimate one. In terms of providing your information, contact in another form rather than replying to the email to find out if this really is something that's legitimate. You know, some common sense things that consumers can do, but I can't tell you how often kind of our own carelessness in, you know, responding to the link that's sent to you can result in that type of breach.
So when we talk about the data breaches, some of the big firms that have been targeted, and we've seen a bunch of those in the news over the past year, what is happening inside those organizations that makes them vulnerable, Dave?
Well, I think a lot of times it just has to do with the larger the organization is, obviously the more data they're likely to have and the more valuable that data might be. In many cases, I mean, study after study shows, and Eric kind of touched on it, a lot of this stuff is caused by human error. Things are not configured correctly from a security standpoint. Steps have not been taken to implement the right type of security posture and so forth to protect the data. Or people just do stupid things. For example, they put a bunch of sensitive information, PII, passwords, whatever, in an email, in a spreadsheet, and email it to someone outside the organization or even sometimes within the organization where that can be hacked. So you have a lot of people who don't really understand how prevalent these attacks are, how easy they are to perform in some instances when they're not doing the right things. And they're making it easy for the bad guys to get this data. And they either want it because they're going to sell it, or they're going to use it to perpetrate more. You know, if I can get your customer list, a common attack now via email, a type of phishing, is now I send out fake invoices to them and have the money redirected to my account. I mean, we have seen this countless times with customers. There's so many different ways that information can be useful above and beyond just whatever value it might have. So again, even if you're a small company, the bad guys want to steal this kind of information from you, and they'll do all kinds of nefarious things with it.
So we got a message from a listener named Larry, and he says he doesn't trust third parties to keep passcodes and is wondering about your opinion on what may be an old tried and true way of keeping records, writing them down.
Well, my answer to that is if you can be certain you're the only person that ever was going to have access to them written down, sure. You know, if you're in a private location where no one else can get to that, because chances are your average burglar is not going to break in and be like, hey, this looks like a list of passwords. Let me break into your Fifth Third account with that or whatever. But if it's in any kind of place where someone is going to have easy access to those passwords, yeah, I would say that's not a very good approach.
Okay. So we want to make sure that we're offering the listeners some ways to avoid being caught up in these tangled webs and also to do some precautionary methods. One thing that always stands out to me, Dave, when you're on and you provide, you know, some ideas on how people can protect themselves, you always list to avoid public Wi-Fi. And it seems so impossible to do that if you're on your phone, you don't want to use your data, if you're at a coffee shop and you want to get some work done and you need internet access. I mean, it's all public Wi-Fi, and so many of us are doing that all the time. You say not to do that.
So let me ask you this, Michael.
Oh, dear.
For whatever your data costs you for the time that you're at your coffee shop or whatever, I can guarantee you it's going to be a lot less than what it's going to cost you to repair the identity theft or having your bank account drained from some man-in-the-middle attack where some hacker's sitting in the same place and they're stealing your information as it's going over the wire in that
coffee
shop.
How are they doing that?
Again, it's called a man-in-the-middle attack. It can be fairly technical. It could be or frankly, fairly simple. It could be a rogue access point. I set up an access point that looks like the access points you connect to at Starbucks. You connect to it instead, and boom, unless you're using a VPN and taking specific steps to protect yourself, I got all the information that you're sending out.
A VPN is a virtual private network.
Yes.
Can you tell us what that means?
It's basically software you would install on your device. A lot of corporations will require you to use a VPN if you want to connect to their systems from some remote location. But even for the average person, you can get something like Nord. And again, you can get a list of very well vetted VPN software, because if you just download the first thing you run across, it might be malware. So again, CNET, ZDNet, they'll rate these things every year. Nord is a popular one. It creates an encrypted tunnel. So whatever information you're sending from your computer out there on the internet, it's encrypted the same way that the data in something like LastPass would be encrypted. So I'm not going to tell you it's 100% foolproof, but it will make it very, very difficult for someone to have access to that information, assuming it's configured correctly.
Eric, when you're consulting with businesses on how to stay safe with their software and their networks, what type of perspective do you offer on their use of of business devices like business phone or business laptops when they're in the public realm?
One of the things that we do, and obviously everyone has their own devices at this point in time. So if you have a business and you are have very sensitive information that employees may deal with, some businesses will disable the ability to be able to burn to removable media so that you can't burn to a DVD or CD or a flash drive, or will automatically require any data in transit to be encrypted as it's being saved to the particular flash drive. Additionally, if you have a device, as many businesses do, your first call is to your firm's IT department. They will remotely wipe your device of any information that it may have on it, because you may also be able to have some of the business's data on it. So some of these are things that, you know, are widely available, easy to be able to do. But as I said before, sometimes our own carelessness, you know, prevents us from maybe using best practices that way. So sometimes businesses can require, before you can copy anything to a flash drive, it will automatically encrypt it, things like that.
If I am online with a mobile device, for example, but I'm just using the data plan, am I vulnerable in any way?
I don't think I could ever tell you that you're not vulnerable to different attacks. Some of those that we talked about before, phishing emails, things like that, whether or not someone can intercept the particular transmission that you have, if you're using encryption, that can certainly make it far more difficult for someone to be able to, you know, intercept and understand what you're doing. So there are always risks. As Dave said at the outset, it's all about risk mitigation. Try to take some of these steps that within your resources that make it less likely to make yourself a victim, and try to trim back the data that you're holding onto as well, and the forum in which you're displaying the data.
And I think it's important to point out, I agree with everything Eric said. Many of these things cost very little other than your time. You know, you can get very low-cost VPN software. You can get very low-cost endpoint/anti-malware software. You can use multi-factor authentication for nothing. It's just a matter of having the knowledge and turning it on. So you don't have to spend a lot of money to make yourself a much harder target. You just have to have the knowledge and the willingness to do these things, because you are a target. It really is a matter of when, if you don't do these kind of things.
Okay. And our last minute together, I want to ask both of you this. What is, if you could force people to stop doing this one thing that exposes them, what would it be?
For me, I would say it would actually be to force them to start doing something, and that is to turn on multi-factor authentication, two-step multi-factor or two-factor authentication, whatever it's called, on every platform they use. Because while it's not foolproof, it makes it much, much, much more difficult for someone to break into their account. And in most cases, they'll just move on to the next person that doesn't have that turned on.
And Eric?
I'd say change your password regularly and make sure you're not using the same password among multiple platforms. It just makes yourself a much smaller target at that point in time.
I always leave these conversations with a to-do list, and hopefully I'll get to it this time, so I'm not sweating so much next time you guys are in. Eric Richardson from the Voorhees Law Firm and Dave Hatter from Entrusted, thanks to both of you for coming in and scaring us today and giving us some good details for National Cybersecurity Month. Appreciate it.
Thank
you. Pleasure.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.